She had a feeling her interjection must have exasperated Carl, but to his credit, he showed nothing. Fallon looked at her. Finally, he said,
Sells children, you say?
Yes.
To rapists?
Yes. He nodded, and his expression hardened in a way she liked. He looked at Carl.
We don't know each other well, but I don't think you're a bullshitter, and Kanazaki certainly doesn't think so.
Carl sipped his beer. You're both right. Fallon nodded.
All right. What do you need from me? And if the answer is just translation services, I'm going to be disappointed.
An hour later, the three of them were sitting in a 12-person passenger van in a parking area at Bangkok Port in Klong Toei, a long, baking asphalt scar wedged between the opaque green Chao Phraya River and the labyrinthine metal tubes of some sort of refinery. Livia had used the gossamer to track Li Pai here. He was somewhere inside the port, beyond a security fence, so there was nothing to do but hope his vehicle was parked somewhere in the enormous lot and that he would soon return for it. The thought that she might finally be on the verge of learning where she could find that little girl who Dirty Beard said he had acquired from Leek Pie was maddening. She kept trying to push it out of her mind, but it kept forcing its way back. Apparently, Fallon owned several vans, two of them with the doors stenciled Tips, Tours, and Trips, the third, the one they were in, unmarked. And on this occasion, sporting stolen plates as well, just in case. Fallon was in the driver's seat, Carl in the passenger's seat, and Livia in back, sheet plastic spread out across the seats and footwells. She was monitoring the gossamer carefully, not just because she didn't want to miss Leek Pie, but because it was the only way she could distract herself from her surroundings. The smell of polluted water and bird shit and diesel, and the sight of the massive container moving machines that she had first seen at night and thought were monsters when the men drove her and Nassan and the other children to the port. It was reanimating that early, overwhelming, primal terror. It was making her feel like that little girl again, so panicked, so helpless, so unable even to understand what was happening or to do anything at all to stop it. Carl and Fallon had been talking about life in Southeast Asia, but Carl must have sensed her distress because he looked back and said, Everything all right? She nodded, not looking up from the gossamer. You sure? She nodded again. She was so anxious she thought she might throw up. Easy, girl. Just breathe. Like before a judo match. Like that. Just breathe. Hey, Carl said, we don't have to do anything. When Leek Pie shows himself, old Fallon here is going to bring him right in. All you and I need to do is wait. She nodded again. For a gruff guy, Fallon must have had a sensitive side, too, because he said,
I know you'd do it yourself if you could, Labi, but we've already discussed this. Too big a chance this guy has been briefed on one or both of you, so just relax and leave it to me.
10 minutes later, and about 1 minute before she thought she would have to step out of the van and throw up, Leek Pie's phone started moving. Here we go, she said. She kept her eyes trained on the gossamer. In a few seconds, she had confirmed Leek Pie's direction. Coming toward us, she said. The parking lot. Fallon said,
Murphy's Law.
She looked up and saw what he meant. The parking area was crowded with cars, but had been mostly devoid of people while they were waiting. But now waves of them were approaching from the river. A ferry must have come in, maybe more than one.
Hail, Carl said. Which one is Leek Pie?
Call him, Livia said. He's 50 yards away. Call him now. Fallon pulled out a phone. Livia read Leek Pie's number aloud. Fallon input it, then opened the driver's door and got out. Carl exited, opened the rear sliding passenger's door, and got in next to Livia. He was holding the supergrade in his lap, in case Fallon ran into any opposition.
Everybody take it easy, Fallon said. I'll be right back.
He pressed the send button on his phone, dropped the unit in his pocket, and started walking toward the river. Livia and Carl scanned the crowds coming toward them. A lot of the people were talking on mobile phones, but 20 yards away, a middle-aged Thai guy with long, greasy hair and a face as round as a full moon reached into his pants pocket, then held a phone to his ear. He spoke into it, waited, and spoke again. Then he looked at the phone as though confused and dropped it back into his pocket. Leek Pie. There were two other Thai men, younger and fitter looking than Leek Pie, just ahead of him and to each side. They both looked back when his phone rang, then faced forward again, scanning the crowds. Bodyguards. Carl saw it too.
Shit, he said. You get the wheel and bring the van around. This doesn't look like it's going to be as subtle as we'd hoped.
He jumped out the sliding door and jammed the supergrade into the back of his shorts. 10 yards away, the two bodyguards were looking at Fallon, looking at him hard. Carl started waving frantically in their direction.
Dr. Rosen, he called out
as loudly as though he was using a bullhorn, pointing at Fallon as he moved.
Dr. Rosen, is that really you? All the way here in Bangkok? My God, what are the chances? Everybody look, that is Dr. Evan Rosen, right here in the flesh, a world-famous Harvard physician and healer and very handsome man too, and he is right here in Bangkok, gracing us with his exalted presence.
Probably no one could even understand him. But the spectacle was enough to get everyone, even the bodyguards, to look first at Carl and then at Fallon, who, without missing a beat but with a distinctly irritated expression, called back to Carl,
Bob, is that really you?
You bet it is,
Carl said, and then the supergrade was coming around, and the bodyguards' eyes bulged, and they reached behind them, and Carl dropped the near one with a headshot, and Fallon hit the other the same way. Livia popped the clutch, burned rubber backward from between the cars to either side, yanked the handbrake hard and did a J-turn 180, threw it into first, and rocketed forward. Then a second later jammed on the brakes and screeched to a stop right next to them, scattering the people nearby. Carl and Fallon already had Leek Pie by the arms and threw him in back, landing on top of him an instant later. Carl flung the sliding door closed and yelled, Go! And nearly fell backward, because before the word was even out of his mouth, Livia had hit it again and they were accelerating out of the parking lot. In 2 minutes, they passed under the expressway, headed briefly north, and made a squealing right onto Rama 4 Road. Livia immediately slowed down and merged with local traffic.
Holy shit, can you drive?
Fallon called from in back. Carl laughed.
That ain't nothing. You should see her shoot.
5 minutes later, they were on secondary roads. Livia immediately pulled over, opened the door, leaned out, and puked onto the gravel shoulder. She remained that way for a moment, gasping, afraid there was more. When she was sure it had passed, she pulled the door closed, wiped her mouth, and drove off.
Sorry, she said. The port isn't a good place for me.
Sorry for what? Fallon said. Anyone who can drive like you is welcome to puke right inside the van.
They stopped a little while later, in the shadows under the elevated toll road. Carl and Fallon had duct-taped Leek Pie's ankles together and his wrists behind his back. He lay prone in the footwell, his body arched across the center hump, his face pale and plainly terrified. Livia moved the front seats forward and joined them in back. She glanced at Fallon.
Look at his phone. Let's be sure it's him.
I already checked his license while you were driving.
Good. But I also want to see who he's been calling.
Fallon reached into his own pocket, pulled out a mobile phone, and pressed the power button.
Passcode protected, he said.
Tell him we need the passcode.
Fallon told him. Leek Pie shook his head.
Ask him if he knows who I am, Livia said.
Fallon did. Leek Pie shook his head again, but a dark stain began to spread out at his crotch, and the interior of the van suddenly reeked of urine.
Glad we put plastic down, Carl said, even sanguine as you are about good drivers puking in your vehicles.
You're lying, Livia said to Leek Pie, with Fallon translating in real time. You do know who I am. Vivavapit, Sakta, Juntasa. That's who I am.
Even before Fallon was translating, Leek Pie began to blubber.
Shh, she said softly. Shh. They were the ones who took my sister and me, not you. That means you have a chance they never did. Now tell us the passcode. Don't make me ask again.
Fallon translated. Leek Pie mumbled a 4-digit number. Fallon input it.
Bingo,
he said. Livia nodded.
See if he has an address book entry for a Rithisak Sorm.
He's got nothing in the address book. This phone's a burner.
She kept her eyes on Leek Pie.
What about recent calls?
Fallon worked the keypad.
A half dozen numbers, no names. Most of the calls made today, a few yesterday, too. Yesterday's are all to the same number, and he called that number today, too, just before we grabbed him.
Tell me the number. Fallon told her. She inputted into the gossamer. Nothing. The number Leek Pie had called belonged to a phone that was currently turned off.
Carl said, Sorm, you think?
Leek Pie's eyes bulged in terror and despair at Sorm's name. She looked at him, then nodded to Carl. Looks like Sorm turned off his phone right after that last conversation. Probably radio silence in advance of the meeting with Dylan. Fallon, ask him.
Fallon did, and said, Yes, Sorm told him to turn off the phone until 9 o'clock. He was going to, but we got to him first.
Why 9 o'clock?
Fallon translated. Leek Pie shook his head and said nothing.
She looked at Leek Pie. What's happening tonight at the Srinakaran night market? What did Sorm tell you?
Fallon translated. Leek Pie shook his head again.
We know about the meeting, she said. If what you tell us now tracks with our information, you can live. If you won't tell us, or if you lie, I'll do to you what I did to the others.
Fallon translated. Leek Pie stopped shaking his head and began talking, or babbling, really. Several times Fallon had to stop him, slow him down, ask clarifying questions, but the gist was Sorm was meeting an important visitor at the night market, a visitor who wanted a first-hand look at the trade.
Are you talking about Dylan? She asked.
But when Fallon translated, Leek Pie merely shook his head. Apparently, Sorm hadn't shared the visitor's name. She hadn't really been expecting otherwise.
Who did you call right before we took you? She said.
Fallon translated. Leek Pie began to beg.
I already know the answer, Livia said. I want to hear you say it.
Fallon translated. Leek Pie said, Sorm, and immediately began to beg again. She felt a hunch bubble up.
Are you bringing children from the port to the market tonight, or is it the other way around?
Fallon translated. Leek Pie spoke rapidly. Fallon listened, then said, The children are at the market now. They were supposed to be brought to the port 2 days ago, but Sorm wanted to show them to the visitor. Leek Pie was at the port to pay the boat captain for waiting.
Livia tried to control her excitement and her rage. She looked down at Leek Pie. 2 months ago, you provided a little girl to Krit Juntasa so the American senator could rape her. Who was she? Where is she now?
Fallon translated and listened to the response. He says he doesn't know.
She breathed deeply in and out, trying to control the dragon. Doesn't know who she was or where she is now?
Fallon translated. He says neither.
She stared at Leek Pie, feeling the dragon slipping loose, trying to hold it back. Tell him I'll do to him what I did to Sokta if he doesn't stop lying.
Fallon translated. Leek Pie began blubbering again, and words rushed out of his mouth. Fallon translated simultaneously. Sokta came for a girl, but I didn't know who she was or what she was for, or what happened to her after. Sorm knows those things, only Sorm. The dragon broke loose. Livia yelled, You fucking liar! She grabbed him by the hair, cleared and opened the infidel. Instantly, Carl's hand was on her arm, holding it back. Labi, I don't think he knows.
Cut his face, his eyes hurt him, make him pay, make them all fucking pay!
Her arm trembled. Carl said,
You're doing a great job with him. We need the information. Keep going, you're doing great.
She breathed hard in and out again, and somehow managed to beat the dragon back. She closed the infidel. Leek Pie watched her, his eyes bulging with fear. She realized they couldn't have done a better good cop, bad cop if they'd been trying. She blew out one more breath and said,
Where are they being held at the night market? And that, you better fucking know.
Fallon translated, listened to the response, and said, He says they're in a shipping container. Instantly her heart was pounding, her mind flooded with images of the container she and Nassan had been held in. The dark, the echo, the smell. She tried to shove it away and couldn't.
In this heat? She said, her voice rising. You left them in a sealed container in this heat?
Fallon translated, listened, then looked at Livia.
He says there are air holes and dry ice.
Yes, she supposed there would be.
A farmer doesn't want his produce to rot en route to the market.
but that didn't mean it never happened, regardless. "Which container?" she said. "Where? Tell him to be specific." Fallon and Leekpai engaged in more back and forth. Fallon said,
"He says Sanam Golf Alley. I don't know what that is."
"Hold on," Carl said. He got out his phone and fired it up. After a minute, he said, "It's not an alley, actually. It's the name of a road. There's a golf course on the east side of the market. Sanam Golf Alley runs along it. In between looks like parking for the golf course, maybe deserted at night. And south of that is a gas station and maybe a junkyard or I don't know what. That might be the place, too. Either way, we know the general location."
Livia looked down at Leekpai. "How long will the children be there?"
Fallon engaged Leekpai for a long time, then said,
"If they're not at the port at midnight, the boat will leave without them. The captain is upset and the buyers are furious. Sorm's visitor is supposed to hand over a big bribe both for the captain and for the buyers. Sorm has to deliver it personally to avert some kind of trouble."
"Is the girl with them?" she asked. "The girl you gave Sokda?"
In her peripheral vision, she could see Carl looking at her, concern in his expression. She knew the question didn't make sense. Why would that little girl be in this shipment? But maybe she was. She could be. She had to be somewhere.
Fallon translated.
"He swears he doesn't know. Sorm knows."
"Please," she thought. "Please let that be true. Who are the buyers?"
Fallon translated. Leekpai spoke. Fallon said,
"A Ukrainian crime syndicate, he thinks. He says Sorm knows."
"Why does he think it's Ukrainians?"
Another exchange.
"He says Sorm is very nervous about the delay, and that only the Ukrainians make Sorm that nervous, because they're ruthless and crazy."
Livia was familiar with the reputation of Ukrainian trafficking gangs. She looked at Leekpai.
"Are you supposed to meet Sorm at the shipping container?"
Fallon translated. Leekpai nodded.
"What time?"
Again, Fallon translated. He listened to the reply, asked more questions, then said,
"He doesn't know exactly what time. Sorm is supposed to call him."
"But he must have some parameters."
Fallon asked more questions, then said,
"He's supposed to be at the night market no later than 9, and to turn on his phone when he arrives."
Carl said, "Then Sorm's not expecting Dylan until then either."
"But it won't be much later," Livia said. "Sorm needs time to get those kids to the port. He can't be late."
Carl nodded. "That gives us a manageable window." Livia thought for a moment. Sorm was going to call Leekpai. They had Leekpai's phone, but the conversation would be in Thai. Even if they were texting, her language skills wouldn't be even close to adequate. Fallon must have had some notion, because he said,
"How can I help?"
Livia looked at him.
"Can you hold on to his phone?"
"Is that really all you're going to let me do?"
"Is that all? If you won't do it, we're dead in the water."
Fallon smiled.
"Well, if you put it that way."
"Hold it up for a second. I want to take a picture of the recent call history, and then let's turn it off again, until 9 o'clock, just like Leekpai was supposed to do."
Fallon held up Leekpai's phone. Livia snapped a photo using hers.
"Say the passcode again," she said, "to make sure we remember."
Fallon said it instantly, then added,
"But I don't mind you suggesting it, and it was nice of you to say we instead of you."
She stared at Leekpai. He glanced at her, then at Fallon, then at Carl, then back to her, seeking some sign of hope. Livia held his gaze.
"Anyone have any other questions?"
No one spoke. She kept her eyes on Leekpai.
"Could you guys give us a minute alone?"
In her peripheral vision, she saw them exchange a look. Then they moved away. She heard the sliding door open and close. A moment passed. The interior of the van was silent. Leekpai began to cry. There was some extra plastic sheeting on the seat. Livia squatted alongside him and gathered it up. Leekpai watched her. He started babbling in Thai, faster and faster.
"Shh,"
Livia said, feeling the dragon fill her, suffuse her, become her. She continued to shh him. Finally, the babbling stopped. The only sound was of his terrified breathing. She clenched her jaw and started to cry.
"She was 11, she said in Thai.
11.
Leaf Pie shook his head frantically and screamed, My! He kicked and bucked and struggled against the duct tape. Livia planted a knee into his chest and whipped the sheeting across his face, wrapping it around and around and around his head until he was mummified in plastic and his screams were muted and indistinct. He twisted and thrashed for a while longer. Then the muffled screaming faded. The twisting and thrashing became no more than a periodic twitch. And soon, even that had ended, and Leek Pie lay completely still. The dragon folded its wings, but her lungs still felt hot with its fire. She looked at him for a moment longer, nodding to herself. It was good that he was dead, for what he had done and for what he would now never be able to do again. But overall, she felt just tired and vaguely empty. Maybe it was because, in the end, Leek Pie was a nothing. The one she wanted, needed, was Sorm. And they were so close now. Chapter 28 The three of them dumped Leek Pie's body in a drainage canal, got rid of the plastic elsewhere, and then stopped at a convenience store, where they bought bleach and paper towels and wiped down the interior of the van. Docs was glad Fallon didn't say anything about Leek Pie. It was obviously personal to LaBie, and Fallon either respected that, or understood they had to kill a prisoner for the sake of their mission, or more likely, both. When the van was clean, Fallon drove them back to Best Friend Bar 10, where they had parked the Kawasaki. Fallon had Leek Pie's phone, Docs had Leek Pie's wallet, and would shortly dump it in a sewer. They'd checked him, and there was nothing else by which the body might quickly be identified. Fallon pulled over to the curb and left the engine idling.
"Don't worry," he told them. "I'll keep his phone off until 9, and I'll make sure I'm near the night market when I turn it on, in case anyone's monitoring its location." He smiled at LaBie. "Not that you were going to remind me."
LaBie returned the smile and shook his hand. "Don't forget to keep yours off until then, too. And thank you."
"We owe you, amigo," Doc said. Fallon shook his head. "Nah, I was getting bored doing odd jobs for Kanazaki anyway. Just buy me a Singha sometime. Semper Fi."
They shook. Docs and LaBie got out of the van, and Fallon pulled away. The two of them rode east out of the city center until they were on quiet roads. After a while, they came upon a little open-air roadside restaurant. They ordered a late lunch of hot and sour soup and chicken stir-fried with sliced ginger over rice. They didn't talk about Leek Pie. In fact, Docs was barely thinking of him. He was still trying to figure out what was bugging him about their intel. LaBie must have seen something in his face, because she said, "What is it?" He looked at her. "Do you trust me?" For a moment, it looked as though she would say something, but then she didn't. She just nodded. "I want you to tell me about these leads of yours." Her head retracted as though he'd raised a hand to her. "What do you mean?" "I'm not doubting you, or asking for proof, or anything like that. You know I believe in you, LaBie. I told you that."
"Then what?"
"You said my instincts have always been sound before. Well, maybe so. But something is wrong here. My gut is telling me so, but I can't figure out what it is. I thought it was Kay, but that ain't it. He's on the level. You persuaded me. But something's still off, and I need to see the whole picture to understand what it is. If I don't know what you were up to before we ran into each other, how you got that Glock, how you learned Sorm was supposed to be at Les Nuits, how you learned about the Sorm, Leek Pie, Night Market connection, if I don't know those things, I can't see the battlefield the way the enemy does, meaning I can't anticipate him. And that means the one who's going to get anticipated is me. Us."
He waited. All he could do was hope she'd come to trust him enough to tell him what he needed to know. When she finally spoke, she didn't look at him. "There are things about me," she said, "and I don't want you to know them." Lord, what just those two short sentences seemed to cost her, and how much trust it took to enable her to say so little. "Hey," he said, but still she wouldn't look at him. "I know you don't much care to be touched," he said,
But would it be all right if I just put my hand on yours for a minute? She didn't answer, but her hand was on the table and she didn't move it, so he decided the answer was yes. He reached out and looped his fingers loosely around hers. There is nothing I would ever judge you for, he said. Nothing. I have some notion of what you've been through in your life, and I don't want to pry into any of it. All I want to do right now is kill anyone who ever hurt you. Still, she didn't look at him, but she tightened her fingers around his. I would never ask, he said, because, among other reasons, I already know everything about you I need to. He saw she wasn't looking at him because her eyes had filled up. He wished he could have put his arms around her, but that was his way, not hers. But you know why I'm asking you now. Something's off about our intel, and I can't figure out what it is if I don't know how you uncovered the trail that led you to Pattaya. After a moment, she pulled back her fingers. She turned her head farther away and tilted her face down, and he saw she was blinking away tears. Then, still looking away from him, she told him a horrific, harrowing story about how she and her sister were kidnapped at only 13 and 11, sold by their parents. How they were taken on a cargo ship from Bangkok to Portland by 3 of the kidnappers, men she called Skullface and Squarehead and Dirty Beard, obviously the way she had conceived of them as a child. She told him the men had threatened to rape Nassan, and that Labi had tried to prevent them by doing what the men wanted in Nassan's stead. She didn't give details about what that meant. She didn't need to. She told them that, of course, the men had been lying, and that when they tired of Labi, they tried to take Nassan. Labi had attacked them and sliced open the eye of the leader, Skullface. The men had retaliated by raping Nassan so savagely that her sister was left catatonic, meaning that Labi's efforts to protect her sister had probably been the very thing that doomed her. She stared off while she told him all this, crying steadily and silently and without visible emotion beyond the tears themselves. She told him how she had spent 16 years not even knowing whether Nassan was alive or dead. She was given the name Livia by a man who purported to rescue her, a man who was actually behind the sister's abduction. She killed that man. She escaped his house. She became a cop. She tracked down the man who had taken them. It turned out they were all with the Royal Thai Police. She learned they had killed Nassan years earlier. In a Bangkok hotel room, she killed Skullface and 2 others who had been part of the conspiracy, a U.S. senator, the brother of the man who had rescued her, and the senator's bodyguard, Bagman. She had used Special Agent Little's offer of a joint anti-trafficking task force as an excuse to return to Thailand to finish off the others. She had smothered Squarehead with a pillow, but not before getting numbers from his cell phone address book, numbers that enabled her to track Dirty Beard. Dirty Beard had thought to ambush her, showing up with 2 other cops, all armed with Glocks and equipped with night vision. She had taken their guns and killed them all. Dirty Beard had told her about Le Nui and about the night market, a contact there named Leek Pie, who sold children. And she told him one more thing. There was a girl in the senator's hotel room, the one she'd been asking Leek Pie about in the van. A little girl of about Nassan's age at the time they were taken. The senator had been raping her when Labi showed up, and had his man take her away because Labi, the treasure from the past, seemed more interesting. Labi had been at gunpoint, helpless, as they led the sobbing girl away. And the girl had looked at Labi with beseeching, agonized eyes. And Labi didn't help her. She couldn't. She had been helpless herself, and she couldn't stop thinking of that girl. She had to find her, protect her. She had to. She had to. By the time she was finished, his own eyes were wet, not just because of what she'd been through, but because of what it had obviously cost her to relate it to him. They sat silently afterward, Labi looking out into the distance. I've never talked about any of that with anyone, she said after a while, her tone flat. Never. I'm sorry for making you. She didn't answer. Labi, I'm sorry again, but I need to ask you one more question. Again, she didn't answer. You say you took the guns off Dirty Beard and his two partners and killed them all, but it sounds like you interrogated them first, or at least Dirty Beard. She turned and looked at him.
I made you cry, she said again with that flat tone.
It's not as hard as you might think, but yes.
There was a pause, she said.
I shot the first two. Dirty Beard I handcuffed and drove to a quarry, along with the bodies of the others. That's where I interrogated him. And then I burned all of them.
Fox couldn't help thinking, remind me never to get on your bad side. But he certainly didn't say it.
Now you know about me, she said. What I am.
That nearly made him cry again.
What you are is the bravest person I've ever known. I'm sorry if that sounds condescending, but it's the truth.
She looked away.
I'm tired.
How could you not be?
Can you see the battlefield now?
Better than I could. Let me think for a minute. The two you shot. Well, SORM or DIA or whoever might have thought that was my doing. Using what I got from Kay to work my way into SORM's network and develop the intel that led me to Pattaya. But the third guy, Dirty Beard, burning him to death. I want you to know, if I'd been there, I would have poured the gasoline myself. That's not what matters. What matters is, in my many years in this business, I think it's safe to say I've become known more for bullets than for burning. So what happened to Dirty Beard isn't going to look like something I would have done. It's too personal. And depending on what else they know, they might decide it looks like you.
Meaning what?
Meaning, I'm not sure, but I'll tell you what. I'm getting the sense old Dylan has a real knack for figuring out what other people know, and then feeding them something new that fits with it so they think they're developing their own intel and coming to their own conclusions, when in fact, whatever they come up with, he's effectively planted in their minds. That's what he did to Kanazaki with the ambush in Pattaya, and I can feel him doing it again now. I mean, he's using a communications channel he knows is compromised to talk about how he's meeting SORM at the night market. Why would he do that? Maybe we just buy it and act accordingly, sure. But that doesn't feel like his style. I feel like he fed us the night market because he knew we already had something pointing in that direction. And sure, he's being oblique with the tents and all, but that's just theater. He'd know if we were already dialed into the night market, we'd put two and two together and congratulate ourselves for being so uncommonly clever. We'd walk away feeling like we'd figured it all out and had corroboration for the new intel. But in fact, all we have is a damn fabrication.
She nodded slowly. She looked exhausted, shell-shocked. He hated that he'd made her tell him what she did, but he also knew there was no other way.
I see your point, she said, but it depends on whether SORM knows or believes the one who killed Squarehead and Dirty Beard and his partners was me.
Well, look at it this way. SORM knows all those guys, works with them. I mean, you said you used Dirty Beard's phone to track him to Pattaya where he was delivering cash to SORM.
That's right.
Okay. And according to this guy, Squarehead, Dirty Beard tried to warn them that you were coming, that it must have been you who killed Skullface and the others 2 months ago here in Bangkok, right?
She hadn't given him details about how she'd killed Skullface and the others, but given that she'd burned alive old Dirty Beard, he could imagine. Also, when she'd said those names in Fallon's van by way of introducing herself, Leek Pie seemed to know exactly to whom and what she was referring, and it obviously terrified him. Anyway, he guessed it was the extremely personal manner in which Skullface and company had been killed, as much as anything else, that would have signaled to the rest of the gang the killer was LaBie.
Yes, she said, that's true.
And then Dirty Beard gets killed himself, burned to death. SORM hears about it from his buddies on the force. I mean, how could he not make the connection? And how could he not assume Dirty Beard would have given up a lot before he died? Information about the night market, and this guy Leek Pie, who sells kids there. Probably that's why Leek Pie had bodyguards when we got him. Wish I'd thought of it sooner, but okay, no harm, no foul.
There was a pause.
You're right, she said. I should have. I'm just too close to it. I'm too...
tired. You are close to it. But the real problem is we haven't been putting our heads together. Not like we've needed to. Now we are.
She nodded. So Sorm knows I'm here. He warns Leekpie.
And he tells Dylan you and I are working together, or at least in parallel, and probably the first because how the hell else did I walk away from the ambush in Pattaya if I didn't have a partner like you?
She looked at him.
The night vision, she said.
Pardon?
Dirty Beard and his men were using dual night vision and infrared, state of the art. I wondered at the time where they were getting equipment like that. Even police departments in the States don't have it. As far as I know, it's exclusively U.S. military and export license controlled.
Well, you certainly could get it from DIA, under the table anyway.
Exactly.
What the hell is Sorm trading for that kind of gear?
For a while, neither of them spoke, and the only sound was of insects in the surrounding vegetation. Docs finished his soup. Labie stared out into the distance. A couple of motorbikes buzzed past, two and three riders apiece, the girls in back sitting side saddle. Docs shook his head and thought, that far I am not willing to go.
Labie turned to him. She gave him one of those small, sad smiles.
So we're partners?
He held out his hand.
Hell yes, we're partners. And friends.
She hesitated and took his hand. She squeezed it hard and held it for a moment before she let go.
You're right, she said, about what Sorm would know, and therefore about what Dylan would know. I see it now. You would have made a hell of a cop.
He shook his head. Not half as good as you. He thought for a moment.
Now that we've got some additional insight, I see we might have ourselves something of a conundrum about the night market.
What's that?
What if the police figure out Leekpie has been taken? Half of them are on Sorm's payroll. They'll warn him.
I'm not worried about that.
Tell me. I'd prefer not to be worried myself.
A lot of reasons. The initial hours of an investigation are almost always chaotic. Witness accounts will be confused and contradictory. Whatever happened, it happened at the port, so it could be drugs, it could be anything. Will the cops know to associate the victims with Leekpie? And even if they do figure things out that fast, Sorm's phone is off. They can't warn him. I doubt they would know where to find him either, because as much as they conspire with him, would he really share the details of his activities? And even if they do figure things out incredibly fast, and even if they do have a way to reach Sorm, and even if they do warn him about Leekpie, our worst case is he aborts.
But what if he doesn't abort? Then we're back to they know that we know that they know. You know what I mean. What kind of night market approach could we come up with then?
Look, Sorm's not going to abort because he's not going to hear about Leekpie. Their phones are off. He's expecting no contact until after 9. But if I'm wrong, and he does somehow hear about Leekpie, he won't try to set us up. He'll run. Think about it. Between us, we've killed Gant, those Khmers, Skullface, the Senator and the Senator's man, Squarehead, Dirty Beard, the sword guy, the three Pattaya bodyguards, the three DIA contractors, and now Leekpie and his bodyguards.
He smiled.
Well, that is an impressive list. And hell, half of it was before we started working together. Imagine all we can accomplish now.
That's my point. You really think that after all that's happened, Sorm would fight us rather than run?
Dylan, maybe, but not Sorm. So our worst case is Sorm aborts. But at that point, what do we have to lose? Do you want to set up at the port instead? If we miss him there, we're done. He's on a boat to who knows where, and we're out of leads. And Dylan is still at large, gunning for us.
He sensed she was right, but still didn't like the uncertainty. And then she said, wait, I might be able to confirm.
How?
Little, my handler. His files on the Royal Thai Police are extensive. He might have some insight into what they're thinking about what happened at the port today.
That would be a comfort, I won't deny.
But we have to go no matter what. Those kids.
He nodded. Don't you worry about that. I'm not trying to figure out whether, just how.
Chapter 29. They stopped at an electronics store where Carl bought a big tablet computer. While he was inside, Livia called Little.
Did you ever find out anything about those three English speakers in Pattaya? She asked.
Not a thing, he told her.
No one's even claimed the bodies. Whoever they were beyond deniable. No return address at all. If they were Dylan's men, as she expected, that made sense. Was that all? He asked.
No, there's something else.
Good. Tell me how I can help. She hesitated, then said,
Your files on the Royal Thai Police are impressive.
Yes, they are.
I'm curious. What are your capabilities in real time?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
There was a shooting at the port in Bangkok a few hours ago. I want to know what the police make of it.
What's going on out there, Livia?
She knew he was going to ask. Look, my time here has gone in some unexpected directions, and I've developed some unexpected leads. I'll give you a full report when I'm back. Right now, I just need the information.
I'm asking why you need it.
She thought of the children in that container, of how hot it must be, even with air holes and dry ice. You're always saying we're a team, she said, trying to control her frustration. Can you just answer my questions? Why does everything have to be a negotiation with you?
It's not a negotiation. You asked me a question, now I'm asking you one.
Her patience broke. Listen, little BD. If you think you're going to stare me down and I'm going to blink, you're wrong. All that's going to happen is I'll remember that when I asked you for help, you fucked me. And I will never forget that. And everything I've learned out here, you can fuck off. You'll never get any of it. And you can find someone else to work with on whatever the hell you're really up to on top of it.
There was a long pause. Little said, Call me back in 30 minutes.
She clicked off and powered down the phone. Still seething, she briefed Carl when he came out of the store. They rode off, parked again on a quiet street, and waited. At 30 minutes, she called back. Her heart was beating hard.
The working theory is a drug heist, he said. The two dead men are known to be involved in narcotics.
She was so relieved she almost felt dizzy. She hadn't believed the police would know so quickly it had been about Leek Pie, but if they had, it would have blown everything at the night market. She would never find that little girl. Thank you, she managed to say.
You're welcome. I wish you'd believe me when I say we're a team.
I have to go. I'll check in later.
Livia!
She ended the call and powered down the phone. She briefed Carl again. Then they found another business hotel. Livia could barely keep her eyes open. It wasn't just the port, or killing Leek Pie, or even worrying about the children in that container. Telling Carl what she had told him, she had tried not to feel what she was saying, tried to detach her mind from the memories as the words flowed out of her. She thought maybe she'd been partly successful, because the contours of the conversation were hazy now, fragmenting like remnants from a dream. She had told him, hadn't she? Somehow she had. But the effort had just drained her. All she wanted was sleep. Sleep, hell, she wanted oblivion. But only for a while, because what she wanted more than anything was to kill Sorm, save those kids, and find that little girl. When she woke, she had no recollection of having slept. It felt more like she'd been unconscious. She waited for a moment, reconnecting with her limbs, aware of the mattress under her, the sense of being in a room. She opened her eyes. The lights were off, but the windows were open to the setting sun. Carl was studying the tablet closely. His expression interested her. It was both relaxed to the point of placidity and also, somehow, extremely focused. She wondered if this was what he looked like behind a rifle scope. If so, she wouldn't want to be on the other end, at any distance. She must have moved because he looked up. Hey there, he said. Hey, how you feeling? Better.
Nothing like a nap, I always say. When this bullshit is done, I'm going to take one every day for a month.
She rubbed her eyes, then got up and walked over. What are you doing?
Oh, just learning everything I can through Google Earth and otherwise about the world-famous Rot-Fi night market.
Any conclusions?
A few. One is, being that old Dylan is a fellow sniper, and a damn proficient one, we will not be using the main entrance no matter what. The overall market doesn't offer any good snapping opportunities. Way too crowded, I imagine, and with all those tents, there's no clear field of fire. But the entrance would work. And that golf alley parking area, which seems to be our best intel at the moment, could be a possibility. But I don't think even Kanazaki and Fallon could get me a rifle and night vision scope that fast. Plus, I'd need time to zero it. Wish I could see the actual terrain beforehand, though.
I've been there.
You have? Why didn't you say so? It's been killing me that we can't have a first-hand look, but that's how they sicked Zatoichi on me. They knew I'd be doing recon around Van's office and probably had one of those bird drones deployed in the area. Can't take the chance again.
I should have thought to mention it. There's just been a lot of other shit.
Don't worry, nothing lost. Walk me through it now. You be my eyes and ears, and we should look at some photos of Dylan, too. There's plenty online. He got semi-famous back in the day, and he's pretty high profile now as the deputy director of DIA.
They started with photos of Dylan, then moved on to the night market. She told him everything she could remember, using various maps and photos and videos they found online as guides. His questions were helpful, all of them obviously geared to means of infiltration, ambush, evasion, and escape.
What do you think?
She asked when they'd been through all of it.
Well, avoiding the entrance should be easy enough. The whole place is fenced off, but I don't think it's much. The fences seem more intended to mark off the boundaries of the market and prevent spillover than to provide any kind of security. I mean, who'd want to break into or out of a night market anyway?
I had the same thought. It's what happens inside that's tricky, because
we don't know what Dylan and Sorm have in mind, yeah. We're supposed to figure it out, though. That'll make us confident in our conclusions. That's Dylan's game.
She considered. We know Sorm's likely to have a new burner, or if he doesn't, we have the number he used with Leak Pie.
Carl nodded. I sure hope it's the second.
Well, what if it's the first? Can Kanazaki do anything with information like that? A burner that gets turned on at a certain time and certain place?
He looked at her.
You know what? Let's find out. You and I had a breakthrough when we put our heads together. I think it's time we did the same with Kanazaki. You all right with that?
I'm all right with it.
Will he be? He smiled. Those CIA types have a saying, better to seek forgiveness than ask permission, so I don't think he could reasonably object.
They sat on the bed. Carl made the call, switched to speakerphone, and tossed the phone on the mattress between them. One ring, then a voice.
Hey, I've been hoping you would call. It makes me crazy that I can't reach you when... Before we go any further, Carl said, I've got you on speakerphone so I can introduce you to my partner, who I'll just call L for lovely lady.
There was a pause. Kanazaki said,
What?
Livia glanced at Carl, then at the phone.
Hi, I understand your name is K.
There was another pause.
What's going on? I'll brief you over a beer sometime, Carl said. For now, suffice to say that L wants the same thing we do, and in pursuit of that thing, saved my ass from that ambush in Pattaya. Imagine the guilt you'd be suffering right now if I died there. Well, L is the reason I didn't. I believe she deserves some gratitude.
There was a pause. Kanazaki said,
Half the time I can't tell when he's messing with me, but if he's serious,
L, thank you.
You're welcome.
So you two are working together. Carl smiled. And very effectively, too, I might add. We put our heads together and realized the bad guys knew we'd become a team and would act accordingly. And then we realized if two heads are good, three ought to be even better. So here we are. I've briefed L on everything you've told me.
Everything?
I'm sorry, amigo, but this compartmentalization bullshit can go too far. Didn't y'all decide it was information siloing that led to 9/11?
That was one thing, yes.
Well, let's not make that mistake again. Anyway, Elle and I have been thinking about your intel. Dylan told Sorm to buy a burner and not turn it on until Sorm was at the night market. Is that the kind of thing you could make real-time operational use of?
Are you joking?
Yes, of course.
How?
How many phones do you think will be left powered down, maybe even kept in shielded cases, until they get turned on at the night market?
Maybe one?
Damn, Carl said. I see your point.
And even if it were more than one, only one is going to call Dylan. But what if my guys can instantly determine if the numbers that are calling each other have ever called any other numbers? If the answer is no, which looks likely here, then we have two pristine burners being used to carry out something clandestine. Meaning, on this particular night, Sorm and Dylan.
Correct.
Dylan knows your capabilities, Livia said. Is that right?
He knows them well, Kamazaki said. I don't like to admit it, but some of the technology we use was invented at DIA.
She looked at Carl. Then this is what Dylan knows we know. They're meeting at the night market. They'll each have a burner we can identify and track. Of course, we have the other number Sorm might use to call Leak Pie.
Carl nodded.
Speaking of which, text me that photo you took, okay? I'm going to text you a photo of a recent calls log. We have reason to believe the latest entry is a number Sorm might be using.
Okay, good.
They were all quiet for a moment.
Carl said, you ever find out anything about those three English speakers Ale and I dropped at Les Nuits?
Nothing. Absolute ghosts.
Right, Carl said, nodding to Livia at the congruence with Little's information. I figured. Dylan's men for sure. And with his bench cleared, I believe Mr. Dylan is about to take the field himself. From what I know of him, I'll bet he's missed the action. Does that make sense?
More than you know, Kamazaki said. We have a whole psych profile on Dylan.
Why am I even surprised?
I'm too tired to argue about sources and methods, Kamazaki said. Hell, I trust this man with my life. He's telling me I should trust you, so I'm going to.
I'll try to trust you, too, Livia said.
There was a pause, maybe while Kamazaki digested the slight lack of parallelism in their assurances. Then he said, anyway, yes, CIA has personality profiles on every significant political, business, and media figure in America. The ostensible rationale is that the Russians are doing the same, and we need to be able to see our people's vulnerabilities the same way our adversaries do. The reality, of course... The reality, Carl said, is that CIA exploits those vulnerabilities for its own ends.
Well, Kanazaki said, you didn't hear it from me.
I'm sure we'll all forget this conversation ever even happened, Carl said. For now, I just want your insights about Dylan. I already told you, he's a badass with brains. But what else?
Dylan has three key personality elements. One, he's a control freak and hates to delegate. Two, he's constantly looking for a more efficient solution, something elegant, a way to kill two birds with one stone. And three, when things aren't going the way he thinks they should, he's quick to intervene and take matters into his own hands.
That invention of his, Carl said, with the APCs. Yes, that really was elegant. It doubled the effective number of armored carriers in any given theater.
Damn, Carl said, if he's such a control freak and hates to delegate... I can only imagine the psychic price he must have paid to bring in someone like old Zatoichi. I hope your government health insurance is generous when it comes to therapy.
Livia looked at him.
It's not just any one of those personality elements that are in play here. It's all three. Think about what this whole debacle must be costing Dylan. First, Gant screws up and gets killed. And then those Khmer's waiting for you in the dark, too. Sorm's freaking out now, and Dylan sends in the sword guy.
Yeah, Carl said, but I think he must have known Zatoichi was a long shot.
Sure, it was a long shot and the only piece Dylan had at that moment on that part of the board, but still, Zatoichi gets killed too. So this control freak, who hates to delegate anyway, flies out with a picked three-man team. They kill Van, so okay, things are finally going his way and reinforcing his belief that if you want something done, you have to do it yourself. And then the three picked men ambush you and Pattaya. And yet again, you walk away clean, and Dylan's team is dead.
Speaking of which, Carl said, thank you again.
She nodded. So even if Dylan had more people he could quickly draw on locally, and he probably doesn't, otherwise, again, why would he have turned to someone like the sword guy? Would he trust them? Or would this former Delta badass say, fuck it, I'll handle it myself?
They were quiet for a moment.
Carl said, told you we all needed to put our heads together.
Still... What's Dylan planning? How do we get to him?
They were quiet again. Livia could feel that all the pieces were there. She just couldn't quite see it yet. But she knew that feeling, that cop feeling of being on the edge of epiphany. What if...
She paused again, then said, I'm just thinking about Van's indictment. Of course it was terrifying to Sorm. It's why he demanded that Gant kill Van, and Gant agreed. That's a huge risk for DIA, but they took it.
Carl said, and carried it out, even after things had gone wrong.
Which brings us back to the same question, Kanazaki said. The trade. What is Sorm giving them, or what has he got on them, in exchange for that kind of protection, that kind of risk?
That's what I'm getting at, Livia said. Assume it's both. For DIA, or anyone for that matter, to get in bed with Sorm, to risk exposure of that relationship, they'd have to be getting a lot. And because of Sorm's own nature, he would inherently have something over them, isn't that right? I mean, you're the intelligence expert, you tell me.
No, that's right, Kanazaki said, which is part of the reason CIA cut him loose. He had some periodic intel on Abu Sayyaf and Jamaa Islamaya and other Southeast Asian terrorist and separatist groups, but what we were getting wasn't worth the potential scandal.
Doc smiled.
Kay says the agency has more scruples than other members of the community.
Livia nodded. She was so close, but she still couldn't quite see it.
But does it really make sense, she said, more to herself than to them, to believe that anyone, CIA, DIA, anyone in your community, would risk continued involvement with someone like Sorm just for some marginally interesting intelligence?
Silence. And all at once, she saw it, right there in front of them the whole time. So obvious it made her think of that George Orwell line, to see what is in front of one's nose needs a constant struggle.
That's it, she said aloud. It has to be.
Carl was looking at her expectantly. Kanazaki said, What?
What is Sorm, she said. What is he most essentially, most fundamentally?
Kanazaki said, I don't follow.
Sorm traffics people, slaves. He's been doing it for almost 40 years. If you want to get in bed with Sorm, it's not because he can periodically offer you something about Abu Sayyaf or Jamaa Islamaya or whatever. It's because he's one of the world's worst human traffickers.
But why would DIA... God, do you guys really need a cop to tell you to follow the money?
I don't know, Kanazaki said. What kind of money are we talking about?
Estimates vary, but even the most conservative are staggering. The UN's International Labor Organization believes that worldwide, modern slavery generates $150 billion a year.
$150 billion?
Correct. With over 20 million people bought and sold annually, a quarter of them children. If you intelligence community types ever want to do some real good in the world, you could quit fucking around with people like Sorm and try stopping them instead.
Silence. She went on.
I mean, come on, you guys know better than I do about Air America and heroin, the Contras and cocaine, the Mujahideen and opium. If your community was willing to help traffic heroin and cocaine and opium, why not something even more lucrative? Something that doesn't even require poppy or coca fields, that just continually renews itself.
Silence again. Kanazaki said, Give me a second, just... He paused, then went on.
This is how they've been doing it. You're right.
God, you're right. Right about what? Carl said. Stop killing me with the suspense and just say it.
Sorry. It's... Hell, you're right. How could I not have seen it?
In the last 10 years, DIA has swung a half dozen elections in Southeast Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. They've become the go-to players for every kind of influence operation. It's gotten so bad, I have trouble getting people on the National Security Council to even return my calls. They know if they want real juice, no messy budget requests, and results so good that no one dares question how they were achieved or where the money came from. That's all DIA now. And this is where that operational money's been coming from. Slavery. My God. I couldn't see it. I didn't want to believe anything like this could be true. I'm having trouble right now.
I don't know, Livia said. Maybe you CIA types really do have more scruples than your DIA rivals. I doubt it, but whatever. Regardless, you cut Sorm.